Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Rivers and creeks roll through the Texas Hill Country, Central and South Texas. Those waterways are draws to tourists, campers, and residents, but they can also turn into raging torrents of destruction. The world has seen how a combination of weather systems led to a so-called rain bomb on July 4th that caused the Guadalupe River in the Texas Hill Country county of Kerr to rise as much as 25 feet in a matter of minutes. Trees, houses, cars, RVs, propane tanks, elders, families, and children were swept into the beast of the river and carried for miles downstream. This deadly flood was not the first devastating flood event in this part of Texas, and it will not be the last. This region is called Flash Flood Alley for its hilly limestone terrain and its abundance of Gulf moisture. Floods have been occurring here for centuries. Devastating floods all but wiped out parts of downtown and west side San Antonio in 1921. 51 people were officially killed in that event, but some historians believe up to 250 may have died. West Side San Antonio was and remains to a degree mostly Mexican-American and impoverished, thanks to a variety of factors, including institutional racism. Many of those who were swept away in the floods of September 9th and 10th, 1921, disappeared into anonymity. Char Miller is a historian and environmental analysis scholar at Pomona College in Claremont, California. Miller is the author of West Side Rising, How San Antonio's 1921 Flood Devastated a City and Sparked a Latino Environmental Justice Movement. We're revisiting a 2021 conversation with Miller in the wake of the July 4th floods. Miller explains what happened on the evening of September 9th, 1921.
It was late in that night of September 9 that the skies opened up. The descriptions of just the thunderstorms themselves, for those of us who have lived in San Antonio, know that the earth moves. It shakes. The houses, whatever the size and strength of them, are rocking from the reverberations. And apparently, according to reports at the time, it was one of the most extraordinary electrical storm displays that people could remember experiencing. Unfortunately, that storm display brought enormous amount of water. And again, it happened in two ways. In the city, the larger metropolitan area of San Antonio, they got about 7 inches of rain, which from one perspective is not a lot. But if you go just north of the city, so north of the watersheds, in and around what we now know as Medical Hill on the northwest side, that captured a lot of the rain, upwards of 17 inches fell there. Equally so on the outer edges of the Olmos Creek, which is the northern part of the San Antonio River, captured another 17 inches. So if you think about the watersheds of San Antonio on the west side, all of the creeks are Zamora, Martinez, San Pedro, Elizondo Apache, and the like, they're getting hit at roughly the same time that the San Antonio northern watershed was being hit with an enormous amount of rain. So people in downtown and on the immediate west side did not understand what was going to happen. And there's no way they could. There was no weather service flashing bulletins. And so when on the west side, those creeks rose rapidly and immediately spilled out of their very narrow banks and blew into the abutting neighborhoods, the damage was intense in part because it's right around midnight and most people are asleep. They stepped out of their bed and they were up knee deep in water. Well, when you're knee deep in water and you have a wooden shack that you're living in, you know immediately that you need to somehow get higher than you are, which is hard to do. So for some who survived, they punched holes in the roofs and pulled themselves up onto that roof because that shack was moving.
This is water that has so much power that it's knocking homes out of their foundation. It's vehicles pushed up against homes and other structures. It is turmoil that's happening within these waters.
It is turmoil, and it's terrifying because there were trees that are coming down like battering rams. If you knock down a series of shacks and houses on the northern stretch of the Apache Creek, for example, they're going to come flying downstream and knock over the abode that you might be hoping would withstand this storm. And the horrific story of the Zepeda family is an example of a family that tried desperately to get itself away from the waters. But as they crossed Alazan Creek, a house comes flying down, flips their wagon, and all but the horse and the patriarch of the family were drowned. This is replicated throughout San Antonio on the west side. And at the same time, the San Antonio River is blowing through brewery areas to the north, where Pearl was located, and then racing down the serpentine course of the San Antonio River. For those of us who know it today, it is very much straightened. But back then, there was about 3 miles, maybe even more, of curves. And when water hits a curve, it does not like curves. It just blows out and keeps going straight. So the damage downtown was pretty intense, but the real disarray and death and destruction was on the west side, a story that has largely not been told, but what needs to be, because it actually is symptomatic of the problems that would not be resolved for the west side until the 1960s and 70s.
You point out in your book that the San Antonio River and then the creeks of the west side, you have two completely different narratives that
Yes.
grew out of those water systems that impacted the city. For example, you're talking about the flooding of the San Antonio River, that it did do a lot of damage and destruction to downtown San Antonio. But then you look at the creeks of the west side, and in your book, you describe those creeks and San Antonio as San Antonio being the palm and the creeks as its five fingers. And those five fingers are sort of pointing out to the west of downtown. And for people who might not be familiar with San Antonio, you know, you're talking about the west side, and the west side in downtown San Antonio, they're practically one geographic area. And that's
Yes.
where the city began centuries
Yes.
ago. That's where the Spaniards
Yes.
came. And those water systems, those creeks, are the reasons why the Spaniards and the indigenous peoples chose to make this area their home, because it was a life source.
Correct.
But because it's also in that watershed that tends to flood, it tends to be the site of much damage when rains do begin to fall.
Yes, and I think you've put your finger on it in the ways in which history shaped that present of 1921 were decisions that 200 years earlier the Spanish reached for understandable reasons. They wanted to produce sedentary agriculture that is sort of located. They were not going to do what the Payaya and other peoples did, which is to move from one shattered watershed to another across the seasons and locate their food that way, which is a brilliant way of adapting to Texas's weird climate often and stressful climate. But the Spanish wanted to build missions, and they wanted a presidio, and they wanted a town, and they wanted all of these things located in one space. And to do that, you need to be close to water. They did it in Tucson. They did it in Los Angeles. They did it in San Antonio earlier than those other places. And so they built right inside the watershed between the San Antonio River to the east and San Pedro Creek to the west, because the initial explorations showed that these were free-running rivers, and it's hard to imagine that today, but they were. But I suspect they also knew there were dangers involved.
Char Miller is the author of West Side Rising, How San Antonio's 1921 Flood Devastated a City and Sparked a Latino Environmental Justice Movement. We are revisiting a 2021 interview with Miller in the wake of the deadly flooding event along the Guadalupe River in Kerr County. More of our conversation is next on Fronteras. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast of Fronteras comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Rains poured at the headwaters of the Guadalupe River in Kerr County on the 4th of July. The river rose over two stories high in a matter of minutes and swept away nearly everything and everyone in its path, sweeping east to west almost 125 miles from Hunt in Kerr County to Canyon Lake, where the floodwaters emptied. Dozens, perhaps hundreds of people were killed by a similar flood event over 100 years ago in San Antonio. Up to 17 inches of rain fell on the San Antonio watershed. The San Antonio River and San Pedro Creek tossed cars, trees, and street pavers about like toys around downtown. On the nearby west side, the creeks that run through the neighborhood rapidly overflowed their banks and tore through the impoverished area. Homes that can be generously called shacks were torn from their foundations. Bridges were washed away, as were countless people. The body count is officially 51. Up to 250 people may have been killed. As happens with many flood-ravaged areas, promises are made and not kept. That's how it was for decades after the 1921 floods in San Antonio. Char Miller wrote about the floods and the resulting environmental justice movement in the book West Side Rising. We're hearing an excerpt from an interview I had with Miller in 2021. Those floods and others that followed led to the channelization of the West Side creeks in the 1950s and to the construction of a downtown river tunnel in the 1990s. Miller says those creeks are being restored with a view towards environmental conservation, recreation, and flood control.
The very creeks that destroyed the West Side from the 1920s onwards, and actually much earlier than that, are now sites of recreation. They are sites of these sort of greened up spaces that lures people to them as opposed to escape from them. These are for the community. It's not the Riverwalk, which we have ceded to the tourists. That's fine, you know, let's drain them of their disposable income. People now, as part of the vitality of the West Side, see as one of those elements, these natural systems that are healthier than they have ever been, and are helping to build up the strength, physical strength of the community. So that if you protect nature, you're also protecting human beings. And I think that's what the West Side Creeks reorganization and re-beautify has also signaled.
What I thought was also really thoughtful in your book, West Side Rising, is that at the end of the book, you have the names of the people who died, who were injured, and who were missing. And there were dozens and dozens of them. And also, towards the end of the book, you sort of take us on a walking trip up the San Antonio River and up the West Side Creeks. And as you're sort of taking us down these paths, you're also pointing out this is where the Cepedas died. This is where Ben Corbo died trying to save his fruit stand, as you're sort of taking us through these landmarks. And I think that just personalizing this story of the 1921 West Side floods is so important, so that we're not looking at it just as a, you know, an old black and white photo. You're putting names and stories to these people who were killed in the storm or who were injured, or how the girl on the cover of West Side Rising, she's a young girl who's, I don't know if it was a Red Cross station, but she was at an aid station and she's carrying a baby. Are they the only survivors of the storm? We don't know, but she has that 1,000-mile stare and she's staring right at you from that cover.
Yep, she is. Her head is not down. Her eyes are looking straight at you. And I was having that in mind as I wrote that last section where I took that imaginary walk up the river and then up the West Side Creeks, in part because even as I celebrate the transformation of river and creek beds in the ways that the city has done it, and again, it's unusual in American urban history for this to have unfolded at such a level, I didn't want to forget those moments where and places where people came to rest. And their bodies were recovered. Saying their names to me is vitally important. I'm Jewish, and one of the things we do at Yom Kippur, which it will celebrate this September, is you read the names of everyone in the congregation who died. You say them out loud because you want us to hear that not only have we lost this many folks, but those many families are grieving. And the job is to go and embrace them, maybe not in a COVID world, but in another time. And I wanted that same oral expression, as best a book can do, is by listing the names that I was able to recover. And part of that was simply to enumerate those who died, because the city says only 51 people died. Well, I know there was at least 30 more than that. Even the city's police chief said, look, the numbers of people who have disappeared, who have flowed down the river, we will never know. And that was equally true for the U.S. Geological Survey that mapped out the whole of this flood in San Antonio and to the north. They estimated hundreds of other people died up and down in Austin and San Antonio and farther north up through Georgetown, because the communities that got ravaged almost inevitably were poor Mexican communities for which, you know, as the bodies disappeared, they disappeared. And so I wanted to be able to, by that listing, at least for a moment, for us to remember those who disappeared, to pay homage to them, to give them a voice in the book was really important. And thankfully, reporters in Spanish and English newspapers were very keen to capture the eyewitnesses as best they could. And in a sense, I'm grateful to them for their coverage, because it meant I was able to take those stories and put them into the book. And if it has any sort of larger purpose, it's frankly to give voice to those who died.
I did want to ask you about how you came across one of the most extensive and complete reports on the 1921 storm, which was by the U.S. Army, a report that was never made public to the city. Yeah. Can you share that story?
Oh, yeah. So this is one of those happenstances, those felicitous moments when sometimes I just love being alive, because it just happened. I'm sitting in my office at Trinity University, and a man walked up to my door and knocked on the door frame and said he had heard that I was working on a flood, on the flood of 1921, and I might want to see what was in his HEB bag. And so I went, yeah, please. And so he pulls out this large report that was bound with metal. I mean, it was clearly a U.S. Army report from the 1920s. And he said, you're going to want to look at this. And I start leafing through these stiff pages, and my eyes are just popping, because it was the official Army report in which the U.S. Army not only had engineers on the ground who were moving up all of the watersheds and doing analyses of the flow that came down those watersheds. They cataloged every single bridge that was off kilter in some fashion. And then they had pilots flying off of Fort Sam Houston who went south to north, photographing all the way up the watersheds, and then turned them into what they call mosaics that showed us where the damage is. And there's one photograph in the book that is one of these mosaics. And, you know, this is immediately after the close of World War I. So what the military is doing is training its ground troops as well as its pilots on how to assess damage. But the text that follows that also gives this very close reading in terms of what the Army did. And thousands of soldiers entered into the fray immediately by midnight of September 9, 10, that crossover period of the day, to pull people out of harm's way, and for some of the soldiers to get into harm's way as they tried to help others. They policed the downtown, but this other thing, which no one knew about, there was a comment in one of the newspapers that they knew the city was being evaluated by the Army, but it does not appear that the Army shared it with anyone, because there's been no discussion of it. So it's this priceless text, as is the other priceless text, a Spanish language pamphlet, I guess you would call it, except it's about 30 something pages, with photographs written by journalists on the West Side for Epoca, one of the many Spanish language newspapers, that identifies, writes beautifully about the flood, takes you through the sort of inner struggles that they were able to do through their own newspapers. Here are Spanish language journalists capturing the moment that, by and large, until this point, people only used the English language newspapers to produce. So This is a story that is at once really devastating, but also is celebratory in that look at how the community, in this case, it's really the West Side, how it saved itself. And that's a tale that's rare in environmental justice stories, but I think it's well worth telling. And I hope the book captures some of that celebratory notion, even though we're celebrating on the basis of a devastating flood.
Char Miller is the author of West Side Rising, How San Antonio's 1921 Flood Devastated a City and Sparked a Latino Environmental Justice Movement. He's the W.M. Keck Professor of Environmental Analysis and History at Pomona College in Claremont, California. He's also a former longtime resident of San Antonio and a former professor at Trinity University. Visit tpr.org to hear the original 2021 Fronteras interviews with Char Miller. And visit tpr.org to find out how you can help survivors of the Kerr County floods. We've compiled a list of organizations and their wish lists. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.